Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth Podcast. The I Will Remember You edition, as we reflect on the passing of one of the greatest coaches in Bengals history and one of the most colorful characters in NFL history, Sam Weich. We'll listen back to part of a conversation I once had with Sam as he shares some stories about the team he guided to the Super Bowl, the 1988 AFC champions. A prominent member of that team, Solomon Wilcots, reflects on a key decision that Sam made that helped create team unity. And we'll also hear from Bengals president Mike Brown as he remembers the head coach who pioneered the no-huddle offense. We'll also have the latest Bengals news on this pod, as we'll discuss a key member of the coaching staff who is staying in Cincinnati and a Bengals assistant coach who has decided to move on. And as Bengals fans begin focusing on the NFL draft, we'll get an insider's look at one of the leading candidates to be the number one overall pick, LSU quarterback Joe Burrow. All of that is straight ahead, but first, here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or Podbean. It's the greatest thing since generous corporate citizens. If you didn't see the news this week, Mike's Car Wash recently presented a check for $54,340 to the Anthony Munoz Foundation. Throughout this season, Mike's Car Wash pledged to donate $1 for every Ultimate Wash purchased the day after the Bengals recorded two or more sacks in a game, that happened 8 times, and on Who Day Wednesdays. That's more than $50,000 that will impact the lives of tri-state kids. So thank you to Mike's Car Wash. Their Ultimate Wash is outstanding, by the way. And to all of the generous corporate citizens that help make Cincinnati a great place to live. Now, let's get to this week's topics. I'm not a big sports memorabilia collector, but one of my favorite possessions is an auction item I was thrilled to purchase at Marvin Lewis's charity golf tournament several years ago. It was created by former Bengals coach Sam Weich, who passed away last week after battling cancer. A few years ago, Sam created 150 unique works of art, at least for avid football fans. They are diagrams of plays, meticulously drawn with a white marker on a black canvas. Each drawing is approximately 16 by 20 inches, and they are plays from the Super Bowls that Sam was a part of. He was a backup quarterback with the Washington Redskins when they lost to Miami in Super Bowl VII. Sam was the director of the passing game under Bill Walsh when the 49ers beat the Bengals in Super Bowl XVI. And of course, Weich was the Bengals head coach in Super Bowl XXIII, losing in the final minute to Walsh's 49ers. A few years ago, I asked Sam how often he thinks about that Super Bowl loss.
Only when people ask me that question. I don't think about it often. I did think about it often, obviously, at the time. And you know, part of the reason, if you think back on it, in 1988, the season went our way. We had a good team. We'd had a poor record the year before. It was a strike year the year before. And we had that substitute teams. And so I think we only played 15 games, not 16, because we canceled one game. So it was a disrupted season. And the team came back, and we did a few things in the offseason to try to make that year a little bit better. Number one, I changed roommates during training camp. I made all the offensive guys room with a defensive guy, all the black guys room with a white guy. So we had guys that probably didn't do as much casual conversation away from the field as they would have if I didn't put them in a room in about 45 minutes a day right before bed check. They had a chance to kind of talk about their important things in their life, what their wife's name was, how many kids they had, what they wanted to do when football was over, you know, what was important to them. And I think it drew the team together better. And we also asked the YMCA if we could come over there, because we had a very small weight room. It was a pack full of good equipment, but it was small, and we would go over to the YMCA at anytime they wanted to in a beautiful downtown facility. And it kind of set the tone for us to come back strong the next year. And the motto of the year was we were going to finish every game. We were going to finish what we thought we had going in 87. After, if you remember, 86 was a good year, too. We had won 10 or 11 games, whatever it was. We were highly ranked offensively and defensively. But getting to the game itself, you have to preface everything with what happened the night before. Stanley Wilson, who is a great running back from Oklahoma, had almost lifetime battle with cocaine, but he had survived it up to that point. And then the night before the game, he got into some cocaine, and I had to kick him off the team. I got heavily criticized for that, by the way, Dan. I don't know if you remember that, but mm-hmm. the media, not so much the beat writers there in Cincinnati, but the media around the country, the national media, really jumped my case. And why in the world didn't you wait until the next morning to penalize him? But obviously, I couldn't face the team if I'd done that. But we went in the game, and I think Stanley Wilson would have been a difference maker because the field had not been watered properly, and it was coming up in 18-inch chunks because they resodded the whole field. And our big bend back runners like Brooks and Nicky Woods and Stanford, they would bend back, and that field would come up in chunks and took away their quickness and their speed and their decision-making somewhat. Where Stanley was more of a Barry Sanders kind of runner, feet real close to the ground, wide stance, you know, dance on a dime, and he could have made a miss, I think, that day. But we got in the game. It was close. I saw Jim Breach at the I think I saw him at both Marvin Lewis's tournament and Anthony Munoz's tournament. I reminded him that we had him kicking a field goal on a field that was tearing up like that. And it was really a little bit right on the edge of his distance with the wind in his face. And he made the field goal. We go ahead by three, but we left. Still remember Chris Collinsworth coming over and poking me with that bony old elbow he got from the University of Florida and saying, Sam, I think we left too much time for number 16 was the way he worded it. Number 16, of course, was Joe Montana on the other side. And Joe marched down the field and did his thing. And with 34 seconds, they score to John Taylor. But if you remember, we dropped we had several key situations that went the 49er way, any one of which had gone our way. We stop them. The clock's on our side. They only had one timeout. We win the game. But we drop an interception a couple plays before they throw the touchdown, or else we would have sat down on the ball, and that would have been the ball game. We'd have been world champs. But I lead up all of that to this point, that Paul Brown had been by poll, a national champion, number one ranked high school coach at Ohio State, national champion. And, of course, the Great Lakes teams were world champions in those days. They didn't have a Super Bowl. And the one title he didn't have, the one trophy, was the Super Bowl trophy. So it meant something to the players, I think. I mean, obviously, they wanted to win for themselves, too, for the team. But it meant something for him to win, for Paul Brown to get that trophy. It certainly did to me, having played for him, got my chance to start. I mean, I was a free agent. He gave me an opportunity. He and Mike and Pete Brown, you know, voted, I guess, to bring him to camp, bring me to camp back in 1968. And I really wanted to kind of let this be one repayment for that favor that led to a career for me. And we fell 34 seconds short. So that's the sad news. The good news is we were one of the top two teams in the league. In fact, we led the league in offense and defense that year. So we had a great year. The fans had a great time. They actually had a live Bengal tiger in the lobby of the hotel for about 2 days until the smell got to them. They had to move him out of there.
The great Sam Weitsch, whose intricate drawing of the Bengals' best basic running play in 1988 proudly hangs in our home. One of the things that Sam mentioned in that interview was his decision prior to that season to try to increase team unity by mixing up roommates in training camp. I discussed that with one of the safeties on that team, Solomon Wilcots. In training camp before your second season, Sam Weitsch decided to mix things up. He took black players and roomed them with white players. He took offensive players and roomed them with defensive players. Mm-hmm. What impact did that have?
Bruce Reimers, offensive lineman, was my roommate. I would visit Eric Thomas. I think he was with Joe Walter. Anybody know Joe was a grumpy dude, you know. Joe didn't play. But Eric is such a jolly guy that he could bring out the best in a Joe Walter. But Sam, it worked. Sam knew what he was doing. Other than that, I'm a defensive back. We don't hang out with offensive linemen. And there's no way that a guy from California and Eric Thomas is going to hang out with a guy from Texas like Joe Walter. I mean, so that kind of forward thinking, it did help us become closer as a team. We were able to spend time off the field with one another and with guys that we normally would not have spent time with. And I just remember week two, we went out and played Philadelphia that year. That's the year that the Eagles had a great team. Buddy Ryan's the coach. They got big Reggie White on the defensive line, Jerome Brown, Chris Carter, Mike Quick, Randall Cunningham. He had a great team. And we went out there, and they jumped out on us. But I just remember during that period, we stuck together. The offensive line started taking over. Defense, we started making plays. We got out of there with a win. But I think it was on that day, week two in 88, that we really knew that we had a chance to be a great team. And we were close, and we had one another's back no matter what happened. And even when we went through some bumpy spots in the season, there was never any doubt that we were kind of a team of destiny.
That Bengals team went 12-4 in the regular season before beating Seattle and Buffalo to advance to the Super Bowl. Some final thoughts on Sam Weich come from Bengals president Mike Brown.
Sam's a very bright guy and quick-minded. He was... spontaneous, and we all remember the fun moments, the time when the rules were that if the crowd got too noisy or unruly, the home head coach was given the microphone on the field to attempt to dampen their behavior. This was an impossible request. And yet with Sam, somehow it all worked out right one time when things were getting unruly and the mic was put in his face, and his comment was along the lines of, "This isn't Cleveland.
You don't live in Cleveland."
And everyone laughed and they shut up. It was remarkable. So when Sam hit the right chord, and he did a lot, it worked. He was very imaginative as a coach. We did new and different things. The hurry-up game was something that he brought to pro football. Others over the years took credit, but he was really the one that innovated it.
An inventive coach and a kind and caring man, gone too soon at the age of 74. Now let's move on to the latest Bengals news. A few days ago, when we learned that the New York Giants were hiring the Patriots special teams coordinator, Joe Judge, to be their new head coach, I sent a text to my friend Bob Soucy, who calls Patriots games on the radio. I told him I was predicting that the Patriots would hire Bengals special teams coach Darren Simmons to replace Judge. It made sense. Simmons had turned down a contract extension from the Bengals earlier this year, and Bill Belichick said so many nice things about Darren before the two teams played in December that it almost felt like he was recruiting him. Well, I was delighted to be wrong. Simmons reportedly agreed to a contract extension with the Bengals this week, which is great news for several reasons. Number one, there isn't a better special teams coordinator in the NFL. The analytical website, footballoutsiders.com, ranked the Bengals number one overall in special teams play this year, and Simmons is universally respected throughout the NFL. But just as importantly, I think it's a strong statement about Zach Taylor. Darren Simmons joined the Bengals coaching staff in Marvin Lewis's first season and has been the team's special teams coordinator for the last 17 years. He interviewed for the head coaching job after the team parted ways with Marvin and was undoubtedly disappointed when the Bengals chose to go with Zach Taylor instead. The fact that he has decided to stay shows his respect for Taylor and the relationship that they formed in Zach's first season. While Darren is staying, linebackers coach Tim Lukaboo is leaving the Bengals to become the defensive coordinator at Boston College under new head coach Jeff Hafley. The two coaches have worked together at three previous stops. No word yet on what the Bengals plan to do to replace Lukaboo. On Monday night, Bengals fans will watch the College Football National Championship game with keen interest that goes beyond seeing if LSU or Clemson will win the title. They will be focused on LSU quarterback Joe Burrow, who is widely projected to go number one overall to the Bengals in this year's NFL draft. Burrow almost came to Cincinnati last year after deciding to transfer from Ohio State. His final two schools were the University of Cincinnati or LSU. As much as I would have loved to see him in a Bearcats uniform and call his games, he obviously made a great choice. Burrow's tie to UC was head coach Luke Fickell, who was an assistant at Ohio State during Burrow's first two college seasons. I asked the Bearcats head coach what he admires about the Heisman Trophy winning quarterback.
His competitive spirit, which is a pride of our program, a pride of where he came from, to me is what makes him what he is. You know, whatever you measure him at, whatever his arm strength is, he plays way above it. And it's just his love for the game, his competitive spirit. There's just something about him, you know, and I think that because he's had to earn everything he's got, not that he didn't, you know, wasn't the best player on his team in high school, but, you know, where he was before and being, you know, third on the depth chart, being live in some scrimmages where, you know, you're getting pounded week in and week out has really helped continue to not make him who he is because he was special coming in, I think, but grow in what it is that he does, his competitiveness, his ability to understand the football game. And know that it hasn't been just handed. I think that means it's got an opportunity to continue to grow and to last. Not a flash in the pan, not somebody that's going to be rattled because things don't go his way right away, because that's kind of what it's been like for him the last three or so years.
As much as you would have loved to have coached him here, were you thrilled for how things turned out for him?
There's no doubt. I mean, I admired the kid from the time he walked in the door before when we had him to when he made a decision. To what he did a year ago, you know, his first year down at LSU to obviously this year. Couldn't be happier for him. Obviously, you look back and you say he made the right decision, not just in where he went, but to do what it is he did, to challenge himself, to put him in a situation where there couldn't have been any comfort to it. And I think that's why he's not only, obviously, he's the Heisman Trophy winner, but to take those chances. If he was going to bet, he was going to bet on himself. This might have been a little bit of a safer bet, not because of a conference or anything like that, but knowing who he was going to and knowing what he could trust. But it really showed me that the trust and he had in himself and what he could do and what he was willing to give up to do it.
Burrow goes into Monday's championship game having completed 78% of his passes this season for more than 5,000 yards with 55 touchdown passes and only 6 interceptions. Using the NFL formula, his passer rating is 145.2. That's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have a minute, give it a rating or share a comment. 5-star ratings help more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.